Last Wednesday morning, we began a series in the book of James and made several introductory remarks at that time. Today, I would repeat just one or two of them that I could start every sermon with. And that is that as we are now going to study the topics contained in this particular book, we are studying a book that was written for a particular reason. And that is to give guidance to everyday practical Christianity. James, the Lord's brother who wrote this particular book, is not dealing with any church problem. He's not going to deal with any doctrinal problem. He's going to deal with problems that every individual has on an everyday basis. Now, what he does is to cover some 20 different topics, each one of them isolated one from the other and really having no relationship to the other, with one exception. And that is that as he begins the book, he starts out talking about trials and troubles and tribulations. And then all the way through the book, you can take each one of these subjects and see how that each one is a trial, a trouble, or a tribulation. How that you are to deal with that particular problem in that particular way. And as then we study this, every lesson is going to be of a different nature, and yet every one of them deals with everyday problems. Now then, I can hasten to say this again, that in every one of these sermons, I'm going to be talking about a weakness that every person has. Now, it doesn't make any difference who you are. It doesn't make any difference how old you are. It doesn't make any difference whether you're an elder, a deacon, a preacher, or whether you were baptized last night. Every individual that fills this audience in every sermon can be stated to have the problem that we're going to be dealing with that day. Now you say, well, how do you know that for sure? The reason I know that is because James is going to be talking about problems of human beings. So if you are a human being, you have this problem that James is going to be talking about. Last week we talked about that there are some problems that I might have that you don't have, that they're not common to all human beings, that I might have some unique, strange weakness that you never even thought about before. You might have some unique, strange thing that I haven't thought about before. But every one of us share common weaknesses, just as we do the idea of hunger and thirst and many other things. Now, these are the things that James is going to be talking about. He's going to be talking about problems that every one of us has. So if you find that your conscience begins to twitch a little bit in any given lesson, and it ought to twitch really in every lesson, then it is merely showing you that you realize that that actually does apply to you. And that really is the purpose of us studying the book of James, is to try to have an overall viewpoint of everyday, down-to-earth Christianity dealing with the normal problems of life that every one of us has. It's awfully unique about the Bible, and I'd say it's not strange, but it is unique that it is different. That is that the Bible deals with all of those problems that human beings have to deal with. And the Bible gives us answers to those problems and tells us about those problems, even though we might not like to talk about it. So now then, let us go into the second thing that we want to talk about today. Now, number one, last week we studied verses 2 through 4. And really, all that said was this. It said, count it all joy, my brethren, when you fall in the manifold temptations. Now, the rest of the book is going to be showing us somewhat about this particular thing. As we begin to talk about trials, we can talk about troubles, really. That's what we call it in our language today. The all different kinds of troubles that you have. All manifold. That means the many kinds, the many different troubles. Now, with all the different troubles that individuals can have, he said, now the thing that you're to do is to count it all joy. He tells us to do exactly opposite of what we would think that we ought to do. Now that's what we talked about last week. Was that very thing right there. And as we began to look at it, we could see this. That we learned that the reason that we're to count it with all joy is because we're to know certain things. before we can really count that joy, we have to understand that as we do this, those troubles are going to change us and make a better individual out of us. They are going to develop patience in us. Not only are they going to develop patience in us, but then it's going to make us a perfect or a complete individual. We're going to be complete. We're going to be well-rounded. We're going to be able to be a person who is mature spiritually, as he says, lacking in nothing. Now, if I could present myself to you today and say, now, okay, over here I am a complete individual, and I lack, really, now what do I lack? I lack in nothing. Wouldn't that be a great thing? If I analyze myself and find that I have reached that plateau where I have no more problems. I am mature, I have patience and compassion and knowledge and understanding and all of those things where I lack in nothing. Now, James says the way that we reach this is by having our troubles. And if we do not have troubles, we are never going to be able to reach that plateau. All right, but now, as we look at this, we see that he goes ahead and tells us something else now that is related to it in this way. He said, now there is another thing that is a basis for this. If I were to draw all of the line under there and say, now how do I do this? That is, how can I go into my troubles, whatever these troubles might be, how can I go into them and I accept them with joy? And by joy, that doesn't mean a laughing type of a pleasurable happiness, but it means an emotion that is on the inside of you that wells up, fully expecting the best to happen, that good things are going to come out from this thing. All right, now, how really can I have that? Because I understand one thing. I understand that really when troubles come into my life, that it depends on how I handle them. I can handle them in one of two different ways. If I handle them in the first way, if I handle them right in the right way, then this over here will happen. We will develop patience in me. I will become a mature individual, lacking in nothing. But if I handle them in the wrong way, then all of that is going to turn around exactly backwards. I am now going to be a bitter individual. I'm not going to be a patient individual. I'm going to be a snippy individual. I am going to lack just about everything. I'm going to be incomplete in almost every realm of life. So I have to know now which way to go. What do I do? I once read a statement of where an individual said, it has been said that time heals everything. Where it is talking about troubles over here. Where it was talking about a very intense trouble that an individual has, that people say, well, time heals that. That if you just let enough time go, whatever the trouble is, you will get over this. And he made a very profound statement. He said, time heals nothing. Time merely gives you the opportunity to do what you need to do to heal that. It's not time that heals anything, but it's how you use your time. So then, when we have troubles, whatever those troubles might be, how do I use my time? How do I approach it? Number one, that's the result. Number two, then it's going to be exactly the opposite of that. Right now, James understands now that there's something we need. Let's look in verse 5 as he goes into it. He said, but. After he says all of this, he said, but. Now there's something that's tied into this. As we tie something into this, how can we do it? He said, but if any of you lacketh wisdom. So now, there is where he comes to wisdom. And he ties it in with that but. That means that we need to have wisdom to know how to handle our problems. In fact, really, that's the only time we need a great deal of wisdom, isn't it? When everything is going along fine and I don't have any problems, what good would a great amount of wisdom do me at that particular time? The only time that I need wisdom is when I am burdened down with a problem or with a multitude of problems that I really don't know which way to turn. Then it's when I need wisdom, so that I'll understand how that I ought to react to this, so that I will not react in number two way, but I will do it the way that I should do it, so that I can end up over here. If I don't have wisdom, no telling what I'll do to handle those problems, and no telling how I will end up. So then, what he shows is that wisdom is the thing that one needs in order to handle his troubles or his problems in the proper way. So today, we now are going to be talking about wisdom. What we look at here in wisdom, we see that wisdom really determines what the trials will do to you. Will they help you or will they hurt you? Let me read you some definitions that individuals have given of wisdom. That is, one says it is the ability to judge soundly and deal properly with facts as they relate to life. Another says the ability to see the underlying causes of a problem and the effect of any action to solve the problem. Another says, and perhaps the simplest and easiest, if knowledge is the acquiring of facts, wisdom is the proper use of facts. I think really that is a basic, down-to-earth, good definition of what wisdom really is. Knowledge is really the acquisition. It's where you study and you fill your mind full of facts. But an individual can fill his mind full of facts so that he can quote all the statistics in the world to you. But when problems come the way, now how do you put these facts in their proper perspective, and how do you handle them so you can come out this kind of an individual? That is what wisdom is. Being able to rearrange them, put them in that way. So then we say, knowledge then is the ability to see the facts as they actually exist, even though we do not desire them to be that way, and even though they cause us problems and pain. Now here's knowledge. A lot of times you look at your problems, and you take knowledge of it. You look at them and you see what the problem is. You look at the facts of the problem. You do not want that problem to be there. You wish it were another way. But you accept the fact this is the way the problem is, even though it pains me, even though I hate it, even though I don't want it. I understand this is what it is. This is what caused it. That is knowledge. But wisdom is the ability to see the reasons the facts are this way and the result or outcome of the situation, even though it's painful and truly a tribulation. So that really is what wisdom actually is. So wisdom, then, is the basis of the whole thing down here. Now, in Proverbs chapter 1, from chapter 1 through chapter 9, actually, we have a dissertation on wisdom. That Solomon there approaches wisdom in this way, that he starts out as though wisdom is a person. And that's called personifying wisdom. And wisdom begins to give a speech, one speech after another. And wisdom says, if you will listen to me, then here is what I will do for you. And if you do not have me, then here is how you go about getting me. And so wisdom then begins to speak to us in those nine chapters. Right now, we could stop and study all nine chapters, which would take several sermons, but we want to use one sermon in each one. And that is that to see what wisdom would do. But in that particular passage, there we can look at all of those good things and see really what it is. Now, as we look at this then, we see that how we use it really depends upon wisdom. Job had wisdom. Job used his wisdom properly. The outcome out here is showing what kind of man Job is, and he was blessed far abundantly, above and beyond what he was before, even though he was the greatest man in the East before that. James says that this wisdom will make us perfect if we actually have it. So, as we then look at this and see, okay, wisdom is the answer. I need wisdom. He said, now, if any of you lacketh wisdom in dealing with all these problems, let him ask of God. Now, there tells the procedure. There it tells how you go about doing it. Now, I want you to notice what he didn't say. He didn't say, if you lack wisdom, go and study all of the philosophies of men. Go and seek the counsel of a guru or something, you know, in the Eastern Oriental philosophies. Go and do something of this nature. He didn't say that. He said, if you lack wisdom, let him ask of God. Now there is a very simple solution in really obtaining wisdom. And until we understand that is the solution, there is the thing that we have to do, we're never going to handle our problems properly because we're never going to have the wisdom that God would give us. And when you get to looking and seeing about asking for wisdom, there are so many things that you could find in this. I could rattle off if I've written some down here. 1 Kings chapter 3, 5, Zechariah 10, 1, Matthew 7, 8, chapter 21, 22, Luke 11, 9, John 14, 13, 15, 7, on and on and on of asking God for these various things. We could read in 1 Kings chapter 3 and chapter 4 where Solomon prayed for wisdom, where he asked God for wisdom, and we know the final outcome of how God blessed him with wisdom. As we turn back to the book of Proverbs again, back in chapter 2 and down in verse 6, why we see the outcome in this way. For Jehovah giveth wisdom. Out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. So, here we have a promise. We have the promise in the Old Covenant. We have the promise in the New Covenant that it is Jehovah that will give us wisdom. And then we are to go to Jehovah and we're to ask of Jehovah for this wisdom. Now, not only does it say that he will give us wisdom, but there's something else about God, the way that he operates as he bestows this wisdom upon us. And that is, it says, if any of you lacketh wisdom, let him ask of God, who giveth to all liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given unto him. Now there we have the promise. Now I know right now, in most of our minds, we are getting ahead and we're saying, I wonder how God does that. I sure hope that Lowell now has a section down there where he explains how God will do that. Well, in just a moment, we'll talk about something about that. But right now, what he says right there, he didn't say, don't worry about how God will do it. He said, you ask him, and he will do it. And really, that's all that we need to understand right there, is to have that kind of confidence in God. But look at the play that he makes it here, as you go to God. Now, any time that you go ask anybody of anything, there are certain things that hinder you and hold you back. And you're hesitant in doing it. And there's a reason why we don't go to God on a daily basis and ask God for wisdom. And the same reason is the reason that you hesitate to go to anybody and ask them for anything. And that is because when you go to somebody to have them to give you a gift, the chances are, if it is a human being, you're going to be humbled in some way or another. You're going to be embarrassed in some way or another. Now notice what this says about God. First of all, it says, God gives. Secondly, it says, God gives to all. Now that's one reason why you hesitate going and asking somebody, is because you ask a human and they will refuse. And they'll say, no, I'm not going to give you anything. And that is an embarrassing situation. But as you go to God, it says that God not only gives, but God gives to all. Number three, it not only says God gives to all, but it says God gives to all liberally. Now, anytime we ask somebody for something, and generally, we're thinking about money or something of this nature when we ask somebody for help, we're pretty sure they're going to dole it out on the minimum basis. that if you come and ask me, you say, Lowell, I'm in trouble and I need some money. I'm going to want to know the minimum. What can you get by on? That really is the extent of my generosity. If I'm generous, it's going to be, first of all, because I have to be, not really because I want to be. And then I'll be generous right up to the very minimum, and I won't go above that. God is totally different from that. It said God gives to all liberally, abundantly, overflowing. Now, if we want wisdom, we can expect God to give it to us, a sufficient amount, not just a minimum amount, but a sufficient amount so we can handle all those things. Then the next thing he says is, and upbraideth not. Now, there's a good point and something that we could really expect many times in a human being. It keeps us from going and asking somebody for something because you know that many times you're going to be upbraided. The word literally means cast into one's teeth. That you know that God isn't going to turn it around and throw it back into you. I read a quote one man wrote, just to show that we all think this way. He said, for instance, you go to a human being, you could reasonably expect a speech like this when you go and you ask for something. Quote, it said, you were just asking for this yesterday or last week. You're forever asking for something. Are you never satisfied? Now, God never upbraids, you see, in this way. He goes ahead to say that the guy might say, what did you do with the things I've already given you? Make better use of them before you come back asking for more. And on and on. That is upbraiding or throwing it back into the asker's teeth. Now, when we go to God, and He has absolutely guaranteed to give. He's guaranteed to give to all. He's guaranteed to give to all liberally. And He's guaranteed not to embarrass you and throw it back in your teeth when you go and you ask God for a sufficient amount of wisdom. So there, really, we see the solution to this thing then. Now, we could go to other passages, such as Matthew 7:7, Luke 11:9, and so forth. And there it said, ask, and it shall be given unto you. We have the promise of God to do these things. But we still scratch our head. And we say, how does God do that? I know the Bible says God does. I know the Bible says ask and He will. I know that it says in the Old Covenant and in the New Covenant that He will. I know that. But it would sure help if I knew how. Now, we have the same problem with every realm. We're told by Jesus to pray for our daily bread. But so oftentimes we spend 9/10 of our time worrying about how does God provide our daily bread. Can I just ask God for my daily bread and then just sit down and wait on God to give it to me in a miraculous way? We conclude no. Well, then, must I get out and go to work and do it as though everything depends on me? Well, no. It must be somewhere in between there. God does expect you to do something, and we find a solution to that, but God says He provides the strength so that you can achieve and obtain that daily bread and so forth and so on. But we do the same thing to wisdom. That is, how does God give us wisdom? If I just knew how God did it, it would help me to pray. Now, right there is one of our problems. And that is that the Bible nowhere says we have to understand how the whole universe works. We don't have to understand how God operates. We do have to understand what God says God will do. And that's really all that we have to understand. But being human, we generally spend most of our time arguing and debating, how does God give wisdom? Well, I don't profess to know all the ways that God gives wisdom, but I do know some of the ways that God will bestow wisdom upon us, and that's because that God has told us some of the ways that He will bestow wisdom upon us. Now, number one, and we might not like this, but number one is He bestows wisdom upon us by bringing some troubles into our life. This is one of the ways He teaches us wisdom, is by having troubles or chastisements and afflictions to come into our life. Now think of how many ways troubles and chastisements and afflictions really can come into your life. Of all the troubles and trials of death and sickness and business failures and people saying ugly things to you and rebukes and hurt feelings and children problems and husband and wife and all the different things that really can bring problems and troubles into your life. Think about all of them. Now, in Psalms 119, here we find David speaking. I think this is very significant in David, as he now has committed sin, and he then tried to cover his sin. He didn't really deal with his sin until Nathan came. Nathan came to him, and Nathan pointed out, "Thou art the man." David had been worried sick up to this time. David said that it was affecting him physically, affecting him mentally. He said he was drying up and blowing away. He said, "I didn't do it." Now then, here's what he says really happened here to give him the wisdom and so forth of how to achieve this. He said in Psalms 119, verse 67, he said, "Before I was afflicted, I went astray. But now I observe thy word. Before I was hurt tremendously, before you really cut my heart, before you did what you said you'd do, you had the little baby killed, the little baby died. Then you took all of my wives and another individual, lay with them publicly before everybody. And David suffered the greatest humiliation." Now he said, before this happened here, he said, "I went astray. I was not handling things the way I should have. But once these things came upon me, then I learned to observe thy word." Now down in verse 71, he said, "It is good for me that I have been afflicted, that I may learn thy statutes." So he shows now that chastisement is good, that punishment is good, that hurt, that pain, that troubles, because we learn certain things from them. And then another passage that he deals with here is in verse 75. He said, "I know, O Jehovah, that thy judgments are righteous, and that in faithfulness thou hast afflicted me." I know that even though I don't like it, I know that even though I don't like the problems, I know that they come because it's right, it's proper, and I need to learn how to use them in the proper way. And then in verse 92, summarizes the whole thing. He said, "Unless thy law had been my delight, I should have perished in mine affliction." Now he shows us in here a certain thing now. He shows that God says, now one of the ways I'm going to do this is that I will afflict you. I'll cause you problems. And David said that he didn't like it. It was unpleasant, but he didn't learn from it. And he said, now unless the law of God had been his delight, unless he had his heart set on doing God's law, those afflictions, instead of giving him wisdom, would have destroyed him. See up here. David said, instead of giving me option number one, it would have given me option number two. Had I not had the proper attitude toward my problems and trouble. Now, brethren, think about that. If you don't hear one other thing I say today, think about what David said. David said, when I had my problems, and when my troubles and afflictions came upon me, that if I had not had the proper attitude of I will do what God says, not I will do what I want, but if I had not had the proper attitude, I will do what God says, he said it would have destroyed me. Option number two would have gone into play. You see, troubles can either make us some of the greatest people on the face of the earth, or they can make us the worst wretch that ever lived. It depends on how we handle them. Well, there's another way that God gives us problem, or God gives us wisdom. We learn this over in the book of Proverbs again. In Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8, chapter 4, and verse 1, and there it is, he tells the young people, he said, listen to your father and your mother. This is wisdom. Wisdom is speaking, saying, listen to mom and dad. Listen to them, and then you can get wisdom. Here, if you listen to mom and dad. Now, that doesn't go very well with a young person. They look at mom and dad as not being very smart, not understanding problems. But God says, that is how I do it. I give you moms and dads. They've been through problems. Listen to them, and then you can acquire some wisdom. That's another way. Another way, obviously, is seeking advice from other people who have been through it. Another way is reading the divine words in the Bible. Listen to what the book of Proverbs says as we read this. In Proverbs chapter 1, starting verse 2, David said, I'm writing these things to know wisdom and instruction. Why do you write these? Why do you write the Proverbs? So that you would know wisdom. Where did he get the Proverbs? God gave them. What's God doing to us? As we study the Proverbs, as we study what it says, what is God doing? God is bestowing wisdom upon us. He said to discern the words of understanding, to receive instruction in wise dealings, in righteousness, and justice, and equity, to give prudence to the simple. There it is. That prudence and wisdom, meaning that's the same thing. To the young man, knowledge and discretion. Discretion. There's how you learn it, by studying. That the wise man may hear and increase in learning. What happens to the wise man? He continues to get more knowledgeable and wise. That the man of understanding may attain unto sound counsel. That's how we can learn to do certain things. And then from corrections, as we've seen that David gave right here. David was corrected by fellow man. Now, we've talked about God correcting David, and bringing afflictions on him. Now then, a fellow man can correct us. When I go astray, somebody can come to me and say, Lord, and talk to me, and I can learn wisdom from that very thing, from being corrected there. In Proverbs chapter 8, and in verses 8 and 9, he says this. He said, reprove not a scoffer, lest he hate thee. Reprove a wise man, and he will love thee. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be yet wiser. Now, how do I glean wisdom? I glean wisdom by having people to instruct me, by having people to, as he says up here, reprove me and show me that I've gone this way when I shouldn't go that way. There he says, that is the way to do it, but now watch it again. What did he say right here? He said there's a number one and a number two option over here. If I'm over here and I'm an individual that has some wisdom to start with, and I will look at it the proper way, I will come out a wiser man and love the individual that doesn't. But if I'm a scoffer, if my attitude is bad, and this thing happens, I'm going to come out a worse individual. So we need to learn how to use it. Be careful, brethren, when you ask God for something. Look at it this way. Don't just read that and say, if you lack wisdom, ask God, and you say, oh boy, be careful. You ever stop thinking about that? Well, if teenagers, suppose we're having all the teenagers here, mom and dad are here, and they're telling me all the problems they've got. Mom and dad doesn't understand, they won't give us this, they won't give us that, and all of this. And suppose that I could tell these teenagers, okay, your mom and dad is going to give you whatever you ask. Do you think it'd be wise for me to say, but you better be careful what you ask? Would that be wise? A 15-year-old go in and say, Dad, could I have the new car tonight? Dad says, son, if you ask for it, I'll give it to you. Any danger in that? The 6-year-old goes out and sees his dad going deer hunting. Comes in and says, Daddy, can I go shoot the 30-30 this afternoon? Certainly, honey. If you ask for it, I'll give it to you. And so he goes out. Any dangers involved? Now, when you ask God for something, be real careful. Stop to think. If God gives it to you, you have a tremendous responsibility, and you may mishandle it.
When you ask God for wisdom, oh, I know what we want. I want the same thing. See, the reason I know what you want is what I want. I want to sit down in my Naga High chair, ask God for wisdom, sit back, watch the Super Bowl this afternoon, come in tonight at 5 o'clock, and my head is just packed full of wisdom. God just packed her in. That's the way I like it. See? But now, how does God give me wisdom when I ask Him? Oh, Lord, please grant me wisdom. It just may be that God says, all right, Lowell,
you're ready for it. I want to make a wise man out of you. Are you ready for your troubles? And then he starts bringing the troubles upon him. And every problem he brings, my head starts being filled full of wisdom.
Okay, Lowell, you really want wisdom? And then it might be that somebody comes around and corrects me on something, and that's embarrassing. Do I really want it? It may be that now that I'm going to have to study the Bible like I've never studied it before. It's going to take hours on end. Do I really want it? I have to obey my mother and father. Do I really want it? I say, no, I don't want it that way. I don't want to do things like that. I want it my way.
Okay. Now we're going number two, right, aren't we? God gives me then all of these things where I can get wisdom. He grants me what I ask. Oh, Lord, please give me wisdom. God grants it. I take it with the wrong disposition and the wrong attitude and end up over there a totally worthless, helpless, useless individual because I did not respond the way God would have me to respond. Then we come to the last, to the next thing here, very quickly, and we can phase it out.
He said here, but let him ask in faith, nothing doubting. Now then again, we're asking faith.
When we get to talking about faith in chapter 2, we're going to have a whole section on faith. So I'm not going to deal with it to a great extent right here, but merely showing that right here, he uses a man of faith and a doubter as opposite one to the other. That over here is a man of faith. And over here is a doubter. I didn't say an unbeliever. He didn't say unbeliever. He said doubter. Let's look at me as a doubter. What is a doubter?
Well, if I'm an unbeliever, it just means that I know the Bible said, ask for wisdom. I don't believe it. I don't believe it.
I know how you go about getting wisdom. You go to the university and you enroll in philosophy and you do this and you do that. I don't believe it. That's an unbeliever. But what's a doubter?
A doubter is an individual that reads it and says, God said he'll give it to me. So I ask God, oh Lord, give me wisdom. I really believe you will.
I think. Probably. Well, probably not me, but if somebody else asked, I know he would give it to them. I know God's not lying.
If Roy asked, God would give it to Roy, but not me.
Well, he might give it to me. Yeah, I think he would. I believe that he would give me wisdom. Lord, please give me wisdom. I know he won't give it to me like he gives Roy. Now what am I doing? I'm a doubter.
I believe it one minute with all my heart, and the next minute I kind of doubt that he will do it. I'm not sure. All right, what does he say? He said here, don't you ask God in that way. Now if you want wisdom, see, asking God is more than just saying, Lord, give me wisdom, and then going watching the Super Bowl. You ask God, give me wisdom, believing that God will give it to you with all your heart. That's what faith means. If God said it, I believe him. He said nothing doubting. Don't doubt anything. For he that doubteth, now he's going to tell the kind of person we are if we doubt. It's like the surge of the sea, driven by the wind, tossed to and fro. What kind of a man am I? I'm an unstable, erratic, fickle individual. I'm a yea and nay man. Yes and no. I believe and I don't. I'm not the type of individual that has any stability. And in this particular case, what would God have to do to give me wisdom? He'd have to perform a miracle upon me and make a man out of me, wouldn't he? He'd have to do something else and give me that confidence and that faith, because as long as I'm that kind of an individual, I'm just a totally hopeless, useless individual. All right, he says here, let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord, a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. If I'm that kind of a man, I'm an unstable man. That's what I mean. I'm a useless individual. I'm an individual that, as I said, God would have to perform a miracle to give me a backbone, a moral backbone, before he could give me that wisdom. So, we have two promises. The promise of God is this, that if you lack wisdom, you ask of God and he will give it to you. But the second promise is, if you ask of God for wisdom and you doubt, he will not give it to you. Let not that man think he shall receive anything of the Lord.
Now, how do we conclude the lesson? We conclude the lesson by looking at it in this way. Right over here is the big thing that gives us problems, is these troubles over here. If I didn't have any troubles and problems of a thousand different kinds, I wouldn't be so concerned about what I need to do. But if I didn't have any problems, I would never be a patient, matured individual. I'd never be a quality individual. So I want to be this kind, and the only way if I can be this kind of a man is to have my troubles and trials. Therefore, I will accept them with joy. But how do I accept them with joy? How can I be happy if I'm in trouble? I have to be happy knowing that all things will turn out good. But how do I know that? I know that all things will turn out good if I take these troubles and I handle them according to method number one. Whatever trouble I'm in, if I go about it in the proper way, I will come out a stronger individual. He said, well, that's simple. But now you have a problem, don't you? See, I told you, every person in here has problems. You have the same problem. There's not a person in here that is divine. Not a person in here that says, Lo, I never have any question about anything. I can handle any problem, any way, it doesn't make any difference, handle it just like that. Not a person ever walked can do that. You have your trouble, I have mine. What is the trouble? We don't have enough wisdom. So what do? If you want to handle those problems, there's what you need to get. To get it, how do you go about it? So you see what we can do the next 7 days? See what we can do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday? We can spend a little time praying for wisdom so that maybe next week we can handle problems a little bit differently than we handled them this week, so that maybe the following week we could be a little bit more mature than what we were last week. Should there be one in the audience today that understands that your life is not in harmony with God's will? If today you need to be washed in His precious blood, you let it be known while we stand, while we sing the first stanza of this song.